Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Dave Wannstedt, Bears head coach for 6 years.
The Bears.
The Bears.
Super Bowl champion.
How about them Cowboys?
Yeah!
Great mustache.
Some say it's a symptom of manliness. Others a cause, the mustache.
Wani, hanging out with Molly and Haw every Tuesday.
Open up the door, it's Dave.
Who?
Dave, D-A-V-E.
Dave Wannstedt.
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It is always a joy to talk with Coach Wannstedt. Good morning, Dave. How are you?
Morning, Dave.
I am great. Absolutely. It's happy to get, obviously, last weekend over with and move on to the Super Bowl. What, from a TV and a fan's perspective, couldn't have been much more exciting than that. I will say that, huh?
I got to tell you, it was amazing. Two games that go to overtime, and obviously the huge blown call in one game, which leads to a conversation about changing rules for pass interference, and then the other game, Tom Brady takes the ball, marches down the field, and wins it, and that leads to a conversation of whether the overtime rule needs to change so everyone gets a chance to touch the ball. It just seems like the audience was amazing, Dave. Everybody watched these games, and it was great value.
You know what? I got two thoughts on that. One, the rule change, I can get that now. I would be all for that. It almost doesn't seem fair, and I'm a defensive guy, you know, and that's the big battle cry. Well, you got to stop them, but boy, you would like to get an opportunity, at least one opportunity on offense, you know. So I could see that role changing, and I'm going to go back. I got 2 points on that, on the missed call, the Saints missed call as far as the pass interference. Yes, was it a missed call? Sure it was. But I'm going to quote Don Shula. He used to always say, hey, you know, there's no such thing as a small penalty. There were probably two or three holding calls in that game. I can remember the obvious penalties that everybody would talk about when I was a head coach. And sure, they make a difference in the game. But there was a holding call maybe, or maybe there was a pass interference or another three or four penalties in the game that changed the field position or obviously took you out of field goal range or different. So, and then, you know, what'd you throw it for on first down? And I get it, Sean Payton, you want to score a touchdown, that's fine. But you were definitely in field goal range, you know, a little bit like the Atlanta Falcons. I didn't feel bad for them when they, you know, they line up and they could have kicked the field goal against the Patriots 3 years ago. Remember, they go sack or whatever it was. It was stupid. I mean, I would have taken a knee three times. People would have been booing, but I would have kicked the field goal, and they would have. And you know what? They would have had to use their timeouts. They would have had no timeouts,
right,
and they would have had about 40 seconds left in the game. So, you know, I guess it's all a matter of how you want to look at it and where do you want to put your focus, but. But there was more to it than that play. That was the focal point. That was a big play, absolutely. But, you know, you still got to kick the field goal. You still got to make it. There's still – it wasn't like that play all of a sudden won the game for him.
Dave, were you ever, as a coach, on the NFL rules or competition committee? And what is the likelihood of that committee entertaining some of these changes in the offseason?
Well, I think they could. You know, I mean, you know, Mike Tomlin was on it last year, and you know, when the play against the Patriots at home with the tight end, the possession, did he have 2 feet, you know, that whole thing. I forget the tight end's name right now. But, you know, they kind of forced a change there. I'll tell you who has to be in favor of rule changes for it to happen, because there's a couple general managers on this committee, there's a couple head coaches, and there's a couple owners. And I sat in those meetings previously, and if the owners aren't in favor of it, it doesn't happen. So they have to do a good job of convincing those guys, and they don't like a lot of change sometimes. Now, you know, we'll see which direction this goes. I don't think they can do anything about the pass interference. That was just a missed call, unless you want to go to college and start reviewing every play and make every play reviewable. I mean, that's your only option to get out of that one when you start talking about judgment calls.
Dave, it's kind of amazing to see Tom Brady back in the Super Bowl. I mean, someone joked.
Unbelievable.
11-month drought is ended. But you look at Peter King wrote a thing this week saying that they, on the Sunday morning in the hotel, they added 8 new plays, 5 of which they ran and worked. That's a little late. Yeah, that's a little late game planning, but that's how they roll. And you faced Belichick. You had to play him twice a year. That is a dynasty that I don't think we'll see the likes of again. That is 9 Super Bowls, right?
Yeah, no, never again. And, you know, obviously competing against Tom Brady when I was at the Dolphins and Belichick, I was never a big fan there. But I'll tell you, the last couple years and what the guy did, and I think we talked about it. I talked about it on my Fox NFL show Sunday. I mean, when they had the bye week, you know, we talked about it. He brings in his throwing coach, right?
Right.
At his expense for 3 days so he can tighten up his game, his fundamentals. Think about that. Everybody else, you know, is taking 2 days off. And he's out there and at his age and where he's at to do that. It doesn't get any better. I mean, it's a great. There's a lot of great lessons there that Tom could instill. I think it doesn't make any difference what sport or what profession you're in. I mean, the guy does it right, and it's amazing. And you can make changes like that if you have a quarterback that can handle it. You know, I remember talking to Dion Lewis a couple years ago after that one Super Bowl, and he said Tom basically told him, "Hey, I'm getting hit too many times. I'm not going to change the plays. I'm just going to change who my targets are. So you two guys get ready because the ball's coming out quick." I mean, you know, so that's the things that he does to win games for him.
Dave, he's also 41 years old, and I think that every time that he gets to this stage, you wonder if it's going to be the last time he's on it. And I think you wonder with Tom Brady, even though listening to him, you try to read between the lines, his comments post-game, the emotion that he showed. Could this be Tom Brady winning the Super Bowl and walking off into the sunset? Is that conceivable? Is that possible? Or is that crazy to think?
I don't think it's crazy to think. I mean, would I be totally shocked if it happened? No. Do I think it's going to happen? No, I don't. I just think, and I say that thinking and putting a visual on his face whenever they won that game, you know, and I was with a group of guys out there. We were sitting around watching it, and I don't know if there was anybody on the field, coach, player, fan, that was more excited than Tom Brady.
Right.
And when you have that type of excitement about winning, boy, I don't know how you just walk away from it. I wouldn't shock me, but I don't expect to see it.
It's amazing when you think about that team and Belichick, what he does, what he's always done, dating back to being the coordinator at the Giants. They take something away from you. They will take something away. Tyreek Hill had one catch. I think Travis Kelce wound up with 23 yards. They will go after certain weapons and not let the guys you want to beat to feed be the ones that beat you. Mahomes had the ball for 8 minutes in the first half. So Dave, now we go to the Rams. What is it,
right?
if you're looking at that team, what do you take away from the Rams? What position do you attack? What player do you attack? If you're game planning for them, I used to say it's very obvious it's the running back, and apparently they're not even playing him anymore. Maybe it's the knee, whatever the reason.
Right. You know what? I think it's yes, and I would take away Gurley. I mean, I don't think he's going to go into that game with a fearful thought of Jared Goff beating him. Even though Jared Goff made some plays, I think it's going to be all about the running game. And you know what? The way that thing worked out you know, last game with Gurley not playing good and Gurley being put on the bench, I look for Todd Gurley to come out and give effort. Now, I don't know how he's going to play, but I think that they that he plays as hard as he possibly played. So that would be my starting point. You know, no question about that. But
when you say the running game, do you include C.J. Anderson? Because he's a different type of
runner. Right?
Yeah. The running game. And you know what's interesting about, you talked about how did he take away Tyreek Hill? And I remember talking to Darrell Revis. When Revis played for Belichick, he came to Tampa for that year, you know, and he played for me at Pitt. And I says, tell me, how did he use you? And he says, Coach, it was either one of two things. I would either match up, if it was a good matchup, on their best player, or I would go on their second player, which they did, Stephon Gilmore. Yeah. They put him on Sammy Watkins. He says, and then he would just tell me, hey, you got him one-on-one all by yourself all day. Good luck. You can handle him. And then that would free up a safety to double the best player. And that's what they did. They put Gilmore was not on Tyreek Hill by himself the whole game. They put him on the second receiver, and they doubled up the best guy. So, and you know, the other thing, all week long, every TV show, ours included, everybody talked about crowd noise, right? With the Saints game, how are the Rams going to handle it? With this, how New England's the loudest stadium in America. What did Tom Brady do? He walked up under center. You think he was going to get in a shotgun and try to outshout those guys? He just goes up under center. They line up in the I formation, the old stuff that we did when I was at the Bears, and they ran their offense. That's a great coaching adjustment, right? These young guys aren't going to do that. You think some of these young guys are going to line up under center with an I formation and a tight end? No way. They're going to stay in the – you know what I'm saying? So that was a great coaching adjustment, and it took care of the crowd noise and it calmed things down.
We'll ask you about Sean McVay in a moment. We have to take a break, though, Dave.
All right, Dave, hold on. We'll be right back with Coach Wanstead. It's Mully and Hall on the Score.
Dave Wanstead, hanging out with Mully and Haw.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We have Coach Wanstead for another segment.
Yeah, Dave, you know, we talked about Bill Belichick and your history with him. Sean McVay on the other side is interesting. Yesterday, he almost sounded apologetic, explaining his decision to go for the field goal on fourth and goal at the 1 yard line rather than try to score a touchdown. It was a decision that, you know, the metrics say, okay, maybe he should have gone for it. The metrics, he could have supported his risk taking sort of reputation and all that. And yet he played it conservatively. And do you think, number one, what did you think of that decision? And number two, will he play it safer because it is the Super Bowl? Or do you think that that's just an isolated situation for a young coach?
No, I, you know, obviously you're asking the wrong guy about kicking a field goal rather than taking a chance and going for it. But I, you know, you need points and, you know, I don't think he's conservative. I think he's got a real plan for what he wants to do. Think about the week before that. Now they ran the ball for 273 yards, right? To get it to get into it against Philadelphia in the playoffs, the first playoff round. So they're not afraid to line up and run the ball, and that took everybody by surprise because they didn't think that he would make that commitment. So I think he makes decisions on that. You know, the thing that's not being talked about in this whole game is how well I think people need to start talking about this crazy Rams defense a little bit. I mean, you know, I don't want to put a wet blanket on the play and Sean Payton, but guys, they were up 13-0 at home, and the only reason they gave up those 13 points is because of an interception and field position, and the Saints had four possessions in the fourth quarter and including overtime, and they got 3 points, right? I mean, we went into the game, everybody was talking about we just talked about what Belichick did a great job of taking away Tyreek Hill. Well, last time the Rams played and last week in the first round of playoffs, Michael Thomas had 12 catches in each game. What do you have, 36 yards in the whole game?
Right.
So, you know, so I think Sean McVay does a great job. I think he's going to play to the – but I think he gets the whole picture. And the Wade Phillips and that Rams defense, They're a little bit temperamental, but they got some superstars on there. And if they get excited about playing, you know, I think that they could really match up well, and I think they're going to give New England some real problems. I really do.
I think that's a very interesting point, Dave, because we were talking about it earlier. Dante Scarnecchi does a really good job as an offensive line coach, and you look at their offensive line, and it seems like the group is better than the individuals, right? And
they've had absolutely
90 dropbacks so far in the playoffs. Brady's been pressured three times, hit three times, one hurry, no sacks. Now you got Aaron Donald. You got Ndamukong Suh, as you say. If he wants to play, the guy is an animal. And you got Fowler, and you got Michael Brockers. And if they want to play, they're a very dangerous front. But they are, as you say, up and down. And boy, you know, Tom gets rid of the ball, and they've done an unbelievable job of protecting him.
But since Talib has been back,
yes.
You know, the first time, you know, the numbers are crazy. And I would have never thought this, that a defensive back, a corner, could make this big of an impact on a defense. But look at the numbers close. When he was out, they were giving up like twice as many touchdowns passing as compared to interceptions they got. I think it was 23-6 or something. And then he comes back and they get 12 interceptions and only give up 9 touchdowns. It kind of flips on them. And so the impact, and you've got, you know, Peters, and you've got, you mentioned the guy.
Yep.
Fowler, to me, was the star that game. And everybody says, oh, who's he? Well, he was a first-round pick. What was he, a top-5 pick that they got? So, I mean, they've got plenty of talent to match up with New England. And if they're excited about playing, they're temperamental, yes. But if they get excited about playing, I think that I think they could match up real well against the Patriots. I really do.
Dave, want to ask you a couple Bears things before we let you go. Number one, what was your reaction to Mitch Trubisky being named a Pro Bowl alternate? He gets that experience down in Florida. And number two, they announced yesterday the Bears will play in London against the Raiders, which I don't think is necessarily a great news for a team that wants to maybe stick to its routine, and you play an inferior opponent in an odd setting, but it will be a nice trip for a lot of fans.
Yeah, you know what? That could be of a trap game. I mean, to be honest with you, you know, you'd like the Bears are a better team than the Raiders. Whether you're playing in Oakland or you're playing in Chicago, you'd like to have your normal week of preparation. At least I would personally, because you go over there and all of a sudden it's, you know, all bets are off. And how did the guys respond in the long trip? There's so many variables that you won't have on a normal week. But, you know, I think they got enough talent to overcome it. Mitch Trubisky, that one that surprised me. You know, it really did. I thought that Mitch got a lot better as the year went on, but to be a Pro Bowl alternate, it did surprise me a little bit.
Dave, we'll let you go. My last point here is when we start talking about McVay and the relationship with Goff, we talk a lot about this idea that he's in the guy's head. They like to do him. Muddle huddle, get to the line, and he's going to be telling him what he's looking at, the coach telling the quarterback, and they try to snap the ball with 15 seconds left because that's when the mic goes out. Now, obviously, they ran into problems early in the game with the great crowd in New Orleans. Now there'll be no crowd issue because it's a Super Bowl. Will we, you know, how do you combat that relationship? How do you change things defensively against that?
That's a good point. You know, the difference is Belichick and Josh McDaniels, and Brady, they're going to come together with a game plan. And once they go on the field, I promise you, Bill Belichick's not screaming in the Tom Brady's ear, watch that slot coming off the corner, you know? Hey, I mean what are we talking about here, right? I mean, so, but on the other hand, Sean McVay, I believe that he's really the eyes for Jared Goff.
Right.
You know, because the way they do it, he lines up, and I promise you, until they shut that thing off, McVay is not quiet one second. He's telling them, hey, be alert. This, you know, third and long, they're going to show you cover three, but go to cover two. Hey, second and short, be ready for that Mike Blitzen. You know what I mean? I promise you that he's talking to him, and he's his eyes all the way through that thing. And that's a real advantage for, obviously, that helps. When you have a head coach that's calling the plays,
and he's got a good offensive mind like McVay does, that's a real, real positive, I think, for a young quarterback.
And then alternatively, you got Tom Brady making his own calls, right? You got a guy, got one guy that needs the coach to make him. The other guy's going to do everything, you know. I mean, that was amazing.
That's completely opposite. That's exactly right. And you know, it's the real key that Brady, you know, he's seen it all. I mean, no, Wade Phillips, Tom's been playing as long as Wade, probably. You know what I mean? So, I mean, Wade's not going to draw anything up that Tom hasn't seen before. And, you know, so the trickery to me is not going to be a factor for Brady this week. It's going to be steady pass rush, Aaron Donald and Sue pushing him out of the pocket. Don't let him step up. Don't let him stand there. And then, obviously, they got good enough skill guys that they can lock them down. I mean, you know, they don't have a great group of receivers. I mean, it's, you know, those receivers getting away from Talib and Peters and Mark Barron, it's not going to be easy.
Great stuff, Dave. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay, guys. Good talking to you.
Yep. That's Dave Wannstedt. Really interesting to start talking about the different ways teams operate. And, you know, one of the things you got to do with Brady is you kind of have to play man. You go into zone, and look what he did to the Chargers.
If there was a coach in Tom Brady's ear that long, you feel like he would disconnect the speaker.
Oh, he would.
You know, there's no way he'd put up with that.
Stop. Well, I love that you're so annoyed by that.
I'm not annoyed by it. I just think it's incredible. I think it's I think it's kind of the wave of the future. And I think that, you know, that's the difference between the two quarterbacks. It's one guy is his own computer and the other guy has has downloaded the consciousness of Sean McVay.
When he comes to the sideline, you can say, hey, I told you this.
He does. And, he does. You see that? He's like, and you didn't hear me?
And he complains if he can't hear him.
Yes.
I'd always but be they, like, bad connection,
Hey,
bad
Rams,
connection.
The Rams are in three wide receiver sets 96% of the time. So that's going to be really interesting to see how you stop the run when they're stretching the
field.
You know,
we'll get back to that, but it makes me wonder, are they that by design or is that all the quarterback can handle? Because with the voice in his ear, he does not create a perception of Jared Goff that he can handle a ton on his own.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Hey, my name! Hey, my name! We get better, bet!
We get better,
bet!
We
get
beat!
We get beat! NFL Insider, Mike Florio.
Mully and Law, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We love our chance to talk to Mike Florio. Good morning, Michael. How are
morning,
you?
Morning, Mike. Hey, guys. How are you today?
Oh, we're all pumped up.
Mitch Trubisky, Pro Bowler.
Charles Leno was just named. Then we got Charles Leno Jr. in the Pro Bowl. And I said to David, does that diminish Mitch's accomplishment? How do you feel about it? But hey, the more the merrier. Get loaded up with Bears.
Agents love this stuff, don't they, Mike?
Well, if they have contractual incentives, otherwise they hate it because the last thing you want is a guy to get injured when he's approaching free agency or a contract extension or just, you know, an off season of peace and quiet where you're not rehabbing an injury.
Mike, I watched Tom Brady celebrate when he won and then he thanked his wife and his family and I thought, is this guy retiring if he wins the Super Bowl? Is that the setup here? He was very un-Brady-like and then, you know, had a security guard escort him over to talk to Patrick Mahomes. It was a different Tom Brady.
And he threw out one of the most imperceptible F-bombs I've ever seen. It was so natural. It was so casual. And I guess he knows the FCC shut down right now so he can get away with it. But I wonder what will happen if he does win Super Bowl VI. It would be the perfect bookend, 17 years to the day after beating the Rams for his first Super Bowl. This would be number six. He's got 9 Super Bowl appearances. And I know he has said for years now he wants to play until he's 45. I think he does that in part so the end remains far enough out there that no one recognizes that it's a farewell year. I don't think he wants it. I don't think he would perform well in a farewell year. It's about the team. It's not about him. And it would not surprise me if he takes advantage of that moment, if they do beat the Rams in 12 days and he walks away. And I think his wife is a factor in all of this that we can't overlook. Remember when she was talking to Charlie Rose a couple of years ago on CBS and blurted out that Tom's had concussions. And I really felt then that it wasn't a joke when she suggested after Super Bowl 51 he should walk off into the sunset. And this is 2 years later, two Super Bowl appearances later, potentially another Super Bowl victory later. And now, I don't know what the guy's going to do with his time. I think he'll find things to do and find ways to challenge himself, but it wouldn't surprise me if he does it, because, you know, why not walk away when you're on top as opposed to when Father Time finally catches up with you?
Mike, you were one of the first people I saw cite the league rule that says the commissioner has the authority to take action in the case of an outcome as the Rams-Saints game. It's theoretical, I know, but Michael Thomas picked up on that and tweeted out, "Hey, Roger, pick up the phone." What compelled you to throw that out there, and how realistic or unrealistic did you think that it is?
Oh, I think it's extremely unrealistic in this case. It amazed me that the rule was even there. And the fact that the commissioner has the power to call a do-over, to tell all the teams, we're going back to this point in the game with this much time on the clock and this down and distance, and we're going to play it out from that point. He can craft the outcome however he sees fit. Now, the league wouldn't respond to my question about what it would take to make the commissioner do something like this, and I don't think the commissioner wants to be boxed in advance, but someone who knows how the rules are applied suggested to me that if, for example, someone had run off from the sideline, if there had been a player not in the game who had tripped Tommy Lee Lewis and the official didn't throw a flag and nothing happened with it in real time, the commissioner could, and that would be the situation where he would step in and say, we're going back to that spot, we're going to impose that penalty, and we're going to finish the game. It has to be something beyond the boundary of what we normally see and beyond an official just making a horrendous call. Now, they call this a bad judgment call. It's how do you call it judgment when the judgment is so poorly exercised that the only explanation is his eyes were shut the whole time? And we put on Twitter an end zone angle that someone shot in the stands, and it really does give you an appreciation of how badly this official missed it, because you can see him looking right at it when that play happens. So, look, the commissioner was never going to do anything like that with this game. I continue to be astounded that the power is there, and it probably will never be exercised in our lifetimes or two or three or more lifetimes to come.
What is the takeaway from the overtimes? Do you agree with this idea that both teams need to touch the ball? Do you think Kansas City should have just stopped New England on one of those third downs, or do you believe that both teams should get a chance and the rule needs to be altered for the playoffs?
That most of the people, and I don't know where you guys come down on this, but most of the people who say, oh, you should stop the offense, that's the easy fix. Well, those are the same people who complain that the rules are stacked in favor of the offense, right? I mean, if we agree that in the modern NFL, it's easier than ever to move the ball and score points, then why are we imposing upon the defense this expectation that you should be able to rise up and stop an offense with your season on the line? Why not give both teams an opportunity to possess the ball? Peter King and I were talking about this today on PFT Live, and Peter made a great point. Look, if it was a relatively equal proposition, you wouldn't say, I want the ball forcefully when you win the coin toss. You know that when you've won that coin toss, you have won an advantage. You have won a real opportunity to put the game away. And we've seen the Patriots now do it twice, Super Bowl 51 and on Sunday against the Chiefs, winning the toss in overtime, getting the ball, going down the field, scoring, winning, walking off champions. And so, yeah, I think that it is a rule that needs to be revisited. It is something that the league needs to fix. And look, I understand that if you allow the game to continue after the team that has the first possession in overtime scores a touchdown, you may prolong the games even farther. I would have no problem with different rules for the postseason than for the regular season. I'd be fine with straight sudden death in the regular season. When I first argued that the rule needed to change, I was only thinking postseason. And if it becomes too cumbersome and too many extra reps for players, then I why not just put the ball on the 10? First and goal from the 10. What's wrong with that? And keep doing it until somebody has more points than the other team after everyone gets a fair crack at trying to score.
After all this controversy, Mike, after all this attention paid, what happened in both games, what's the likelihood of offseason rule changes coming? And as it pertains to the officiating crews, NFL getting any closer to beefing up the full-time official contingent?
Well, I think that in any job, if you're devoting your full professional attention to it, you're going to be better. And this is a matter, frankly, of cheapness by the NFL. They like the fact that the Ed Hockleys of the world, who's now retired, but this is a prime example. We had a law practice in Arizona. He made a crap load of money doing that, and he supplemented it on the side with his hobby that paid good money, but it didn't have to pay great money because his job was paying him the great money. So why not pay these people so much that you do attract a you know, the best of the best, and you have access to them 52 weeks out of the year, and you can keep them in shape, and you can come up with simulations, and I think that as gambling proliferates, they're going to need to do it. On top of that, I've been a proponent for several years now, we may have talked about it on this show, of having a video official in the booth, in the game, every site, wearing black and white stripes, who's a member of the crew, who can see what happens at every camera angle that the network has to its availability, and talks directly to the referee and says, throw a flag, pick up a flag, move the ball back a yard, basically acting as a member of the crew who has a vantage point that no one on the field has, but that is the same vantage point that we all see at home. And that's the biggest gap the NFL needs to bridge right now. What we see on TV versus what you see and experience when you're out there in that crucible of activity, primarily trying to stay alive, and secondarily trying to see with the naked eye things that sometimes move far too fast.
That's a great idea, Mike. What do you make of unnamed sources saying the Eagles don't like Carson Wentz and that he's arrogant and, you know,
a bully? Portrayed him as a bully.
But I think, maybe if the guy had written it like, boy, everybody loves David Foles, we wouldn't even be talking about it. But it's that they hate Carson Wentz, Nick Foles, excuse me.
Yeah, and I think that any of the things being said off the record, and one of the dangers of getting anonymous opinion is that the anonymity will be abused and the person will go even farther than what they really feel, because what the hell, there's going to be no blowback here, and it's opinion. Opinion always makes me nervous when it's done anonymously. Fact is one thing, opinion is another, and we've tried to shy away from doing that kind of reporting because we know how malleable opinions can be. But, you know, if this is not made up, if this is not actual fake news, and there are multiple members of the roster and other members of the organization saying these things, it's reason for concern. And as the Eagles prepare to move on from Nick Foles, they'd better be ready to get these concerns ironed out and coach and work with Carson Wentz to get him as universally loved as possible. And the other reality is, in a room with that many alpha males, is everybody going to love everybody else? Probably not. And one last point on that, I don't know why they published it yesterday when it got caught up in everything else. Wouldn't next Monday have been the perfect day to put that story out there?
Yeah.
The first day at Radio Row, everyone is looking for something to talk about other than the Pro Bowl, and we'd love for something to talk about other than the Pro Bowl. That would have gotten so much more traction if they had dropped it a week later than they did.
Mike, yesterday the league announced the Bears will be playing one of the four games in London next season, and the fifth game internationally will be at Mexico City. Where is the league in terms of London and a team potentially settling there, and any more games abroad in the offing?
I was told back during the season that at this point the Jaguars would be the only team that potentially would move to London, and if Shad Khan wanted to do it, the thinking is the owners would allow him to do it. Now, it creates real competitive concerns. How do you properly allocate salary cap dollars with exchange rates and tax rates, and how do you get free agents to go there? What happens when the London franchise has the first pick in the draft and the guy they draft says, I'm not going to London, I'll just go back into the draft next year? So there are a lot of practical issues that could disrupt competitive balance. If you start giving the London-based team extra stuff to make up for the disadvantages of being in London, and then that team thrives, all the other teams that are stateside are going to say, oh, you're doing too much for the London team, it's just not worth it. And I think that that's one of the reasons why the NFL will continue to dangle London franchise as a way to sell tickets and generate excitement for the games that are being played there. And beyond London and Mexico City, you know, we hear Brazil, and we hear China, and we hear this, and we hear that. And I really do think it's a lot of the same carnival barkering that's happening in London, where they know that if they flirt with the idea of doing these things, that has the short-term impact of generating genuine interest in those countries. And so basically, I think a lot of the musing that we hear about international growth of the NFL is deliberately BS, aimed at selling the product they currently have as broadly as possible.
And again, I think part of the problem is that it's an American sport. I mean, I don't know, are you going to get a lot of Chinese people playing football? And I mean, and maybe there's a shortage of players. It might be a good idea.
Well, but that's part of it too. Football has to become a robust part of the experience for these kids. And that's real, you know, I think back to myself in the 70s. You discover football. It looks cool. The football cards are cool. The electric football game is cool. The Madden game for kids now, it's cool. The helmet, I want to wear it. I want to be one of these guys. Well, if you don't have organized football to play, then you can never really fulfill that desire that watching football plants in your little 9-year-old brain. And I think that is part of it. And the problem is trying to proliferate youth football at a time when youth football is shrinking. How are you going to get kids in other countries to play a sport that kids in our country don't want to play? So selling this thing the right way is hard to do right now. I mean, ideally, it should be an Olympic sport, but there aren't enough countries that have viable football programs to get it to the Olympics. So this is a long-term 50 to 100-year fight for the NFL, and they know that, you know, there's plenty of money to be made. They're still going to play their 256 regular season games. The more people they can get interested in them, the better.
Mike, I enjoyed, as a Matt guy, the reference to Sean McVay being a Miami of Ohio wide receiver playing against Julian Edelman as a Kent State quarterback. That was a cute storyline that'll be, you know, kind of developed. What are your predictions? Who's going to be somebody that becomes the darling of Super Bowl week early on, and maybe is a story that is worth exploring that maybe people don't know about?
Oh, I think what's going to happen, and I really am not looking forward to this, all these former Rams players still salty about Super Bowl 36 are going to start coming out of the woodwork complaining about the alleged walkthrough practice that was secretly recorded right by the Patriots. Remember all that Boston Herald stuff from before, sure, Super Bowl 42? And there are still guys like Marshall Faulk and Kurt Warner and Dick Vermeil and Eric Dickerson were saying it last week. That's all going to get dusted off. And, you know, I don't know. Reasonable minds may differ on this. I think that if that becomes a thing, it will be hammered into the heads of every member of the Patriots organization, specifically the players, that they're trying to delegitimize one of our Super Bowl championships. Let's go out there and kick the crap out of these guys so they will shut up once and for all about being cheated by the New England Patriots. And even though most of these guys would have been, what, 5-6 years old, right? 10 years old at the oldest. And isn't that amazing to think that the nucleus of the Patriots team would have been kids in grade school?
Yeah.
And it's the same freaking quarterback and same head coach 17 years later.
It's unbelievable when you think about it in that perspective. Yeah, Mike!
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Thanks so much.
See you guys.
Appreciate it. That is Mike Florio.
That's the end of this interview.
It's unbelievable. That is absolutely incredible.
It is. And that's going to be the storyline. And you talk about, you know, people who were affected by that, and Dick Vermeil. How about Mike Martz, our guy?
That's right.
Former Bears offensive coordinator was involved.
Maybe in there.
In that.
That's very true. All right. We're going to bring in Dan and Connor. Saw them wandering the halls separately. And we'll somehow manage to get them
separately
over here.
Together.
One guy
Trouble
was over here,
paradise?
And the other was
starting
there.
Rumors.
No,
okay. Starting rumors?
No, there's a lot of love there. I'm just saying. I didn't see them together, but I did see them
individually. Well, they'll be here together.
And
in
we'll
studio.
Talk to them.
Yeah.
Boy, let's not turn it into some. Why does everything have to be some conspiracy around this place? It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.